Ladies and gentlemen, you already know what time it is. Welcome back. Another episode of Gym Class All-Stars. Your Gym Class All-Stars, Alex and I, are here back with another episode. And for, I think, the first time, we are going to start with the MLB because that's probably the biggest headline in sports as of right now. Nolan Arenado on the move. Best third baseman in baseball is headed to St. Louis. The deal is still being finalized. There's some cash involved. They're restructuring his deal. There's going to be a lot of prospects headed to Colorado, but the Cardinals adding a massive piece to their already talented roster. What are your first thoughts about this trade for the Cardinals?
Cardinals are already contenders, so adding a piece like Arenado is a great play. Did I read this right that they're also, the Rockies are sending the Cardinals $50 million?
Yeah, that's part
of
the
insane
contract restructure for Arenado.
Wow. To me, like, getting a piece like Arenado and also getting $50 million is, like, good on him. Obviously, they'll need to pay him, but still.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the Cardinals end up having to send back for him. It might need to be more than just prospects. Who knows? But either way, a huge, huge acquisition for the Cardinals. Now looking, you know, primed and ready, not just for the start of the season, but to make a really large push at a World Series run. Actually, you know, a few years back, I got to see them playing in the playoffs. Saw Yadier Molina hit a walk-off sack fly, so it's pretty cool, and it's good to see that they're going to be contending still. You know, they're hot. They're really building this core, and add a player like Arenado, just taking that next step. So fantastic job there. Our news, the Phillies, thank God, not just re-signed JT Realmuto, but also earlier signed Didi Gregorius, re-signed him to a two-year deal, two key guys from last year. Rebolstering, and now the Phillies roster looks a little better now. It looks like it's coming into form a little bit. What are you looking at now after Realmuto and Gregorius are back with us?
Well, at the start of this offseason, we were in full-fledged panic because they couldn't sign Realmuto. Zach Wheeler potentially wanted it. It just seemed like everything was going to fall apart. And we basically are running it back with the same team as last year, just a better bullpen. So it gives me hope. I'm still a little bit concerned because I think we're still missing a piece. But the team we had last year, I think, was good. Like I said, we're in a tough division. There are a lot of great teams, a lot of great players, like the Braves, for example. The Mets have kind of jumped in there. Nationals are looking to go back into glory. Marlins just always beat us for whatever reason. So we're the odd team out here. We just, nothing's looking great for us, but I'm happy to see our team, you know, look like last year, and we're going to see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, the Phillies were close last year. I don't remember if we were one or two spots off of that last playoff spot, but we were right there to the very end. You bring back key guys like Realmuto, Gregorius, you already have Harper, of course, and we've tried our best to bolster the bullpen, you know, at least to make it a step up from last year. Starting pitching is my main concern at this point now after Nola and Wheeler. You know, it's just a little up in the air right now, but we'll see. I got some young guys still, so I'm still pretty excited. Philly's looking good, but like you said, that tough division is going to make for a lot of storylines this year in the NL East.
Yeah, Wheeler had a monster year last year, and Nola, like, granted, it wasn't a great season compared to what we thought would happen, but still, like, he's a top 10 starting pitcher in the, at least the NL, if not the MLB. So there's a lot that could potentially happen. I think they're a little weak after those 1-2 punch. So time will tell.
Yeah, time will tell indeed. Moving forward, Cubbies making some moves as well. Jock Peterson, the big name that they brought in. They also bring in catcher Austin Romine. Let's start with Peterson. Interesting move because at first we thought the Cubbies were rebuilding, but Peterson's a guy who can, you know, he can help you compete. He hits home runs. He doesn't bat for average, but he's a slugger. So do you like or not like that signing for the Cubbies?
I don't, because they need to commit one way or the other. And right now they're just playing, we're going to be as neutral as possible. They've kind of jettisoned a lot of key components. Now they're adding Jock Peterson, who definitely very useful player and a good player. You got to commit one way or the other, or else you're just going to be kind of stuck in this rebuilding hell.
Yeah, I agree with that. Other side of this, though, Austin Romine, a catcher. He's not a top tier necessarily, but could this be the start of the motion of Wilson Contreras on the way out of Chicago?
Maybe, but that's what I'm saying. Where, okay, if you get him and you jettison Wilson Contreras, okay, you could probably get some prospects for him, but then you still have Jock Peterson. You're like, what? Like, you're missing the point here. You have to commit.
Yeah, I agree. I will say Peterson's still like a little younger, so like it wouldn't be awful timetable wise for him. But no, I agree with you. Like, take a year, kind of figure out where your roster honestly is, because right now it's just like, you don't even know if you're going to be bad, if you're going to be middle of the pack, whatever. I like Jock Peterson, so I'm not like sure. mad about it for them, but I don't know. I don't know if they necessarily needed him, which I think goes to your point.
Did they trade for him or was it a signing?
I believe it was a signing.
Okay. That's a little bit better. I was, I guess, slightly under the impression they traded for him and gave up something. If you got Jock Peterson, fine. Like, you need someone to rally around, like, in Chicago. I mean, Chris Bryant, okay, but that you need a little bit more excitement than that, right?
A little bit more. I would agree with that. They're a fan base that loves their big players, so bringing in another one, probably not pissing anybody off, at least in Chicago. Few other free agent moves, nothing too major. Eddie Rosario, the outfielder, is headed to Cleveland, and Wilson Ramos, former Phillies catcher, actually, is headed to Detroit. Detroit, a team trying to compete this year. They had a hot start last year, cooled way off, but Ramos is a good catcher, so he might, you know, help them try and spearhead something. Other than that, the only other news for the MLB would be longtime infielder Daniel Murphy will be retiring after 12 seasons, played multiple positions with multiple different organizations, journeyman, calling it quits after a decade in the league, a decade plus. So shout out to him on a fantastic career.
I got to also, because you brought up Cleveland, who is no longer the Indians. They are currently Cleveland baseball team, but without the baseball team part. I got to say, like, they are dead last in the league in salary paid for players. They've had so many good prospects and just so many great players that they have gotten rid of. You know, we talked about Lindor the other week. The Kluber got signed by the Yankees. They had Trevor Bauer for a time. Clevinger, like, they have a ton of talent. It all gets away. Like, I don't care about Cleveland that much, but I don't know. To me, it's like kind of like the Thunder in the NBA, where they have so much talent, they just can't put it all together. The Thunder at least have made pushes to pay players, but Cleveland's like, we're just gonna make as much money and then kind of be moderately competitive and just be disappointing. So I don't know. That's just my thoughts.
No, that's fair. They're another team in an interesting spot. It's like, you gotta now commit to what you're doing, but like, take the next step. It's like, we know you were rebuilding. We know you have some room to make moves. Start making some moves.
But not even rebuilding. They're a good team. They just, it's like when they have success, they're like, we got to pay you, bye.
Yeah, it's almost like they're moneyballing it, but not quite in the same way.
It's like you've moneyballed it and you found the players and you're like, no, and just shoot them off.
Take them.
I don't want them.
Well, that's our opinions and the news update here for the MLB. Plenty more to come. Don't you worry. Their offseason's really heating up now. We're going to shift over to the NBA now, season in full swing. And the Utah Jazz, of all teams, have taken the mantle of the top team in the league, 15-4. Just finished a rout of Dallas last night where Donovan Mitchell was not even present. Didn't matter. Bojan Bogdanović, 32 points on 7 threes. Rudy Gobert, another double-double. You know, it's tough to say that Utah is going to be a long-term contender in the West just because of how top heavy the Western Conference can be, but we always talk about Utah maybe needing that third piece to be able to perform. But if their role players are going to do as well, perform as well as they have been, Bogdanović, Jordan Clarkson, Mike Conley, if these guys perform, I'm not going to say that a top two or three seed isn't out of the picture for this team.
Yeah, no, I think they're a legitimate contender in the West this year. The problem is, there's no, like, Donovan Mitchell's the closest thing you have to a superstar there. Mm-hmm. And he plays shooting guards, forward, whatever. When he's got to run into LeBron or Kawhi and Paul George, like, it's better than him losing in every playoff matchup to the Rockets, like he usually does, or blowing a 3-1 lead. But I can't see that team beating out the Clippers or the Lakers. They're good, they're young, but just LeBron or Kawhi, or to me, Donovan Mitchell shies away in the playoffs. It's not his fault. It's just he has to be relied on and do so much. And against a positional player like, you know, the LeBron, Kawhi, Paul George, he's going to get shut down, unfortunately, because he has to be that guy and force shots.
I don't know if I agree that he shies away in the playoffs, considering he and Jamal Murray broke the record for points scored in a series last playoffs. But I think the biggest issue is that they have him, and then that's it on the offensive end, it feels like, especially in crunch time when the other players are a little easier to take away. Then you're asking Mitchell to have to go up against a LeBron or a Kawhi and have the success he does against the lower caliber defenders. That's a lot to ask for.
I agree with that. And let me rephrase it. I'm not trying to sound like Shaq here where I'm like, Don Mitchell sucks. Don Mitchell is a great player and is still developing. He's about to hit his prime in a few years. What I'm getting at, though, is Donovan Mitchell has to be like that superstar X factor when it comes down to crunch time. And he can do that against a lot of teams. Like the Mavericks, for example, if they were locked in and like Luka on Donovan, I think Donovan could win that in like a shoot off per se. The problem is when you're playing someone like LeBron, Kawhi, Paul George, like just infamously good defenders and also infamously good players. Like it is what it's like you're playing a game of 2K and you're playing this tightly contested game. You start off killing them and then you are like, okay, what's my try and true method to win? You give it to the best player and just keep spamming them. And that is what I imagine is going to happen in the playoffs, where it's going to be a close game maybe. And they're just like, Don Mitchell, here you go. And you can't win a game like that unless you have such a great player. And I mean like a top 25 player of all time. So,
well, let me throw this notion in then. The player that Donovan Mitchell gets compared to is a modern day Dwayne Wade. And we know my personal feelings on Dwayne Wade. And Dwayne Wade had a lot of success, especially early in his career. You know, 3 years in was already a finals MVP. Do you think Mitchell can find a way to capture that really killer instinct that Dwayne Wade was able to possess in his career?
Yes, he has it to a degree against lesser teams, but he doesn't have it against the top competition yet. And that's why I'm saying give him some time, because Dwayne Wade, you know, played in college, comes to the NBA, didn't he had to hit a stride very quickly. It took him 3-4 years to, you know, get to the finals. He also had the luxury of having a Shaq, and to say Rudy Gobert is anywhere close to Shaq is a tragedy by any means.
We won't discount Shaq's Rudy Gobert slander here.
No, we won't discount that because it's pretty much true. But what I'm getting at is like Dwayne Wade had that chip on the shoulder from Marquette and then went to the NBA, had a good core around him, kind of what Mitchell has, and then like really blossomed into his own, had that killer assassin mentality. And like I'm saying, he has it. It's just not unlocked against everyone. It's like 70-80% of the teams.
How much longer do you think it's going to take for him to get it against everybody?
Honestly, I think it's one of those like 2-3 years type things when like LeBron falls off a cliff or Kawhi Leonard. I don't know. He needs a bit more time. He's got to hit his prime, I think. And then he'll be able to take over if they can keep that Jazz roster together, which that's a different issue, but moving on.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there, but moving on. So we talked about the, you know, the Indians being this team that kind of hovers around the Thunder. You also mentioned when you were talking about that, kind of in a similar area, they trade Chris Paul in the attempt to rebuild, to kind of commit fully to Shai Gilgeous as their top guard. And lo and behold, you know, they may be the 9 seed right now, but that's playoff picture right now for basketball. So my question is, with all these picks that the Thunder have acquired over the years, making their pick not necessarily required to be a top one, are they going to be able to mess around and make the playoffs these 2 years in a row and still get, you know, good draft picks?
Well, I think with the new expanded playoffs, I think they will. I think they're in a very good contention for getting like a 10 seed or a 9 seed. So one of those playing games, and then, you know, you have your picks, everything like that. What I will say, though, is I want to give a warning to any Thunder fans. This idea of hoarding picks is great. Like, it's a great way to do it. We saw good old, wait, what's his, why did I blank on that? Samuel Hinkie. Trust the process. He did it very well. Accumulated draft picks, got Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, and so on and so forth. He set him up for the future. Danny Ainge is a great example of what not to do. He has stockpiled a ton of picks, a ton of talent, but he refuses to pull the trigger on anything that will put them over the edge. He very like stingily got Kyrie. He had a ton of draft capital, really didn't go after anything. He got a great pick in Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, but they're still missing pieces. And, you know, maybe an AD for a year would have been kind of nice. I don't know. Like, what I'm getting at here is, if you are a Thunder fan or if you're Sam Presti, you need to go out there and maybe not this year because you're still in rebuild mode, but like take those assets and make them tangible. Don't just be like, oh, I have this pick, I'm going to trade it for two more picks. You're basically creating your own pyramid scheme of draft capital, which will not end up benefiting anyone. Even if you have all 30 picks in the first round by like 2030, you still have to hit on a few players.
I also think you just revealed the entire strategy. The goal is to get an entire draft class all to yourself. At some point, first of all, you can't just have five straight years of teams that are almost entirely made up of rookies. That's just absurd, and your fans are going to get mad about that. And second, if you have all the ability to make moves, why not try it? You know, you don't have to hold on to every single pick.
Hold on. But Thunder fans are like absolute idiots, and I mean that in the nicest way possible. Like, they're voting Al Horford in the All-Star game. Like, shut up. I don't want to, like, he isn't your best player on your team. You know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is, but, like, don't put Al Horford in the All-Star game. I didn't even want to see him on my team last year. So, I don't know. They'll get somewhere, though. They're have a very bright future.
That is true. I don't think anybody can deny that. And, you know, don't shit on Al Horford. He just wasn't for you guys. Great, great man. One more storyline here. So two teams from last year that had a lot of success. One team made the NBA Finals. The other team was the reigning NBA champion from last year. Both struggling this year. That is the Miami Heat and the Toronto Raptors. I want to ask, of these two teams, who do you think is more likely to turn it around and not just make the playoffs, but make some actual noise come playoff time?
Well, I mean, the obvious answer is the Heat, just because – the Raptors have finally regressed. I think we should have saw it last year, but honestly, Kyle Lowry is playing phenomenal. Pascal Siakam had a breakout year. So everything worked well for them, even despite not having Kawhi Leonard. However, though, and I say, yeah, I think the Heat will make the playoffs. This is my forewarning to you, dude. Like, I don't think the Heat are that great this year. And no, I would like you to admit that last year, I think we can chalk it up as a bit of a fluke.
Wow. Okay. No,
I think so. I think first, you guys got hot at the right time. No pun intended.
Well, okay. I will agree with that. I think it's very clear that the Heat were the most prepared team for the bubble atmosphere. They took it the most seriously outside of maybe the Lakers. But they really like handled themselves well there. But I don't think it was a fluke. I don't necessarily know if the Heat are the definitive best team in the Eastern Conference, but you have to think about this year, the fact that Jimmy Butler has played five games, not because of an actual injury, just because of COVID. So Jimmy Butler is fine. The biggest issue comes with the fact that we are the second worst rebounding team in basketball. The thing is, the roster isn't a whole lot different. I don't believe that Jay Crowder accounted for all of those rebounds that were missing. I think Bam Adebayo said it best, is that the Heat culture has started to slip a little bit this year. I don't know if it's because of the new guys they brought in. I don't know how much of it is because Jimmy Butler is just not in the building. I actually think that's a really large part of it, because we saw the difference that just Jimmy Butler made last year. I don't like to say that one team is made completely different by one individual player, but Jimmy Butler is the leader of this team, both on the court and, you know, emotionally, spiritually. So him not even being able to be in the locker room, to me, is part of a reason why they're struggling. And you have to look at the Heat are losing close games. If Jimmy Butler's playing some of these games, they could go different ways. He's not necessarily our shot maker, but he is our late game playmaker. So I think those have to be taken into account. But I do agree that this Heat team is not the Heat team of last year.
I would also like to give you another warning as a Sixers fan who loves rookies. This isn't about Tyrese Maxey. It's more of a Matisse Thybulle thing, who is still a great player. But your younger players, you should not be afraid to trade them if need be. And I think Duncan Robinson, Tyler Herro may be worth trading. I'm just saying.
I will hold out Duncan Robinson's name because that man is, of course, my Lord and Savior. But I'll say this. If the Heat are actually holding out trading Tyler Herro for Bradley Beal, they're on some drug that I need to get on because they have to have some, that has to be like the best thing in the world to not pull the trigger on that trade. I love Tyler Herro. I love the unnecessary swagger that he brings. But if you're talking about a player, the caliber of Bradley Beal or a just true scorer, which is one of the things the Heat were really lacking last season. And, you know, it always helps to have maybe the best or second best shooting guard in basketball. You can't hold out hope on the idea of what Tyler Herro might be when Bradley Beal is already that good. So if someone like that is within our grasp and Tyler Herro is the step in the way, I love him. I love him, but I don't think I can definitively say he's going to be better than Bradley Beal. So
y'all aren't getting Bradley Beal. Like, even if given offers, I don't think you would get him. I firmly believe that Pat Riley is too stingy to pull a trick on. I think the Wizards want a ton of capital for him, and that's fair because he's a star. I could honestly see him in a perfect world going to the Mavericks.
Oh God.
That to me is a scary lineup if they can keep Porzingis, which that's a little iffy to say the least.
They'd have the same issue as the Nets though, and have no clue how to play defense.
Yeah, but like they could score at whim, and that's honestly what they need right now. Like their defense is shot, just go for a score at whim type play. I just think you guys are stuck in a bad position where you have good players and a lot of use for them. But if you make a move, you either have to commit to like kind of a rebuild or you have to go for contention. I don't think you have the pieces for contention without mortgaging like way too much.
Yes. It's the idea of, are we willing to give up the other assets, the future assets to compete right now? That's a decision we have to make, especially now with the big plan who would have been Giannis. He's off the table. So we'll see what the Heat do. Either way, I think we're both kind of in the same idea that the Heat are the more likely team to find success over Toronto. Either way, I would expect both of them to get back at least in the playoff picture by that time.
Yeah.
Final reminder for the NBA here. All-Star voting has begun today. Actually is double votes. So you get two votes for every time you vote for somebody. Vote for Bam, vote for Joe, all your favorite superstars.
Vote for Aaron Baines.
We'll announce Aaron Baines. Of course. Can't forget him. We'll let you know, of course, who the All-Stars are once they are officially announced. Moving on, a little bit of college basketball here. Said on Twitter, I had to talk about that Illinois-Iowa game that I am heated about. Number 19 seeded Illinois takes down number 7 Iowa at home. The big thing, the big story of the game, so Illinois won by 5. There were 0 fouls called on the Illini in the last 10 minutes and 4 seconds of the game. I am not saying that it is impossible to play that, you know, clean basketball for 10 straight minutes. I'm saying it is extremely difficult to convince me that a college basketball team played foul-free basketball against the best center in basketball for 10 straight minutes. I don't know. I didn't get to, you know, I didn't really see anything major, but refs do let some things get away. And I just fear that when it's a stretch like that, especially when it's the last 10 minutes of the game, something could have come into play. But that being said, Illinois played absolutely fantastic basketball, and Ayo Dosunmu has solidified himself as the best point guard in college basketball, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's really tough. I guess the idea of not fouling anyone for 10 straight minutes of college basketball, that's absurd. Even like if you play incredible and like textbook defense, you will still get called for fouls. Like, you and I have both experienced that. Mm-hmm. We've also experienced games where we've had no fouls, and for me being in the paint, I was always hacked out of my mind, and I don't like to complain a lot, but believe me, I'd be set ablaze if it was like 3 or 4 missed calls. So Illinois, like I said before, they're sort of an up-and-coming team, but they always fall sort of in the middle of the pack. This is their year. Like, they're doing, I mean that in a sense, like, they're doing well this year. I'm not saying they're going to win the tournament. I'd like to first and foremost bite that
not now. Making that prediction quite yet.
But Luka Garza, maybe not the best center in the
Let's talk about that. Let me try and remain as unbiased here, because I actually want to have a legitimate conversation about this. So I believe it was yesterday. There was the image posted of who's going to win the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar Award for college basketball, which is the award that goes to the best center in college basketball. We obviously have been talking all year about how the favorite to win the just overall national player of the year has been Iowa center Luka Garza. But when this graphic came out, Luka Garza was ranked second on the list for best overall centers to actually Illinois' Kofi Cockburn. The reason I really wanted to bring this up now specifically is because Luka Garza outplayed Kofi Cockburn yesterday. However, Illinois' team was able to prevail in the game. Kofi Cockburn by no means is a throwaway player. He is a fantastic basketball player. So I want to ask you, what's the reasoning here as to putting Cockburn, ahead of Garza on the best center list?
Stir up drama. I mean, that's basically the entire like MO of any news reporter, any sportscaster. You want to generate buzz. Luka Garza is the best player in college basketball. And if I'm not if I'm incorrect, please stop me. But if you're the best player, period, shouldn't you then be the best of your position? Hear me out.
Exactly.
It makes plenty of sense. It's like Devonta Smith winning the Biletnikoff Award for best wide receiver and then winning the Heisman Award. That makes sense.
Yeah, that parallels nicely.
I would like to say two things, though, to get out. You know, I know you're heated about Iowa. It's okay. We'll let Big Ten tournament talk, and we'll let the NCAA tournament talk.
Sure.
But I got to tell two things. First and foremost, I have taken the liberty of using our Twitter account to retweet a vote Aaron Baines in the All-Star game. I would just like to let you know we were not hacked. It was me. The second thing being, though, remember Dennis Smith Jr.?
I do.
Dennis Smith Jr. plays in the Knicks. He was part of that Porzingis trade 2 years ago. And he has requested to play in the G League bubble, which I think is very interesting.
Really? I actually, you know what? I don't hate that for a couple of reasons here. Number one, I've heard a lot around the league, or you know, around my sources, that he is going to be out of the NBA after his contract ends. So this is more so he's not getting a lot of playing time in New York. This is a move where he can take a time and showcase not against the top skill in the league anymore, but the futures of the, you know, these are the younger players, the up and comers in the league. He's going to get a chance to prove that he at the very least does belong in the NBA if he can, you know, prove himself. So I get that. And I don't hate it, but he should have already solidified a role as a starting point guard at this point.
It's wild though, because he is so freakishly athletic for how short he is. Like that man can his bounce, he can put his chest above the rim, and he's I think my height, if maybe even a little shorter than I am, which is
maybe
insane.
6 feet tall.
Yeah, so I don't know, like I would love to see him. Like he definitely is electric to watch, and when he was on the Mavs before, I think Luka Doncic ruined his career. Like Luka actually ruined him, because it was like, oh yeah, they can play together, it's okay, and then immediately gets traded to the Knicks and like just never seen again, well, to be honest.
It was that, but it was also, you know, Dennis Smith gets drafted the year before. It's like, okay, yo, this is your team. You had a really good tournament. You really came on at the end of the year. You're super athletic. We're going to get behind you. And then next year, it's like, so about that.
That's what he gets for going to NC State. What a beta ACC school.
Oh, don't hate. Don't hate.
I listen, I have my Duke sweatshirt right here that I will wear proudly as a Blue Devils fan.
And also as a alumni of a school who beat Duke in the NCAA tournament.
Well, it's the best of both worlds. And that's still a great, one of the best tournament games I ever watched. Listen, unfortunately, as much as I love Lehigh, we don't go to the tournament. We hardly can win in our own conference tournament. So like if we go to the tournament, yes, I will root for the underdog Lehigh, but like Duke does win. However, though, I would like to say one thing. We got to talk about Mike Krzyzewski. And granted, Duke Blue Devils, they beat Clemson yesterday. Mm-hmm. So good on them. They're kind of back. And I use the word back marginally because they're not just losing games in a row. But Mike Krzyzewski just went off on a reporter probably a week or so ago about asking him what he thought about the season. And I don't know. I have a lot of respect for Coach K. I mean, he's the winningest head coach in the NCAA for a reason. You know, he's always the Team USA coach. But dude, like you're losing, you just like suck it up and try and do better. And they are now, but there's no need to go off on a reporter. It was like a legitimate question. It wasn't like, so why do you guys suck this year? And he's like, fuck you. So I don't know.
don't know, tough seasons can bring out tough emotions. So I get it on his part, but yeah, no, there's you gotta be able to keep your cool, especially when you're a high profile guy like that.
Well, the wild thing is, like, they have a, you know, they can legitimately win the ACC tournaments. Like, I know they're sucking this year. They'll get into the ACC tournament. They could make a play at winning it, and that's an automatic bid. And even then, they could 100% get an at-large bid. Could you imagine if, like, what Syracuse did a few years ago, where Duke gets an 11 seed and just runs the tables? Insane. Everyone be so upset. I love it.
That would be absolutely fantastic. I will say, you know, I'm somebody who looks at the recruiting classes a lot. They have one of the top freshmen in Jalen Johnson. This is a massive guy who can handle the basketball. So I wouldn't be surprised by any means if something like that were to happen, because we know how good Duke can be. It's just a matter of, can they harness it? And you very often see Duke freshmen coming on at the end of the year, the most recent one having been Jason Tatum. They love to get their freshmen comfortable during the regular season for tournament time. So if they can get there, do not count them out. Final note here for the NCAA. Unfortunate news, longtime head coach, Hall of Fame head coach from Temple, John Chaney, passed away just a few days ago. He led Temple to 17 NCAA tournaments, 5 Elite Eight appearances, and in the 87-88 season, won the Coach of the Year award. His team was 32-2, and for a stretch was the number one overall seed in the nation. Absolute legend for Temple and for all coaches in college basketball. Thoughts and prayers to his family, friends, and Temple University, of course. John Chaney, gone at the age of 89.
Fun fact about him. When they were the number one team in the country, like 87 and 88, they ended up going up against Lehigh, who that was their last NCAA berth until CJ McCollum got there. And he, even with one of the best players to ever grace Lehigh's halls and Darren Queenan, were not able to take down John Chaney and the Temple Owls. So definitely a very well-respected coach, like a PA legend to say the least, and thoughts and prayers go out to him and his family.
Absolutely. All right, one more sport to get to here. That would be the NFL. You know, we're in the week lull here between the championship weekend and the Super Bowl. Would have been the Pro Bowl, but the game won't actually be played, just a ceremony, which is still nice. We get to at least acknowledge the players who had a great season. A few storylines we are going to talk about, though. We've talked about Deshaun Watson requesting a trade. He and J.J. Watt are now both expected to have played their last snaps with the Houston Texans. You know, we can speculate all we want about where they're going to go, but the really big question here becomes is there something wrong with Houston? Because it's not just they need to go into a rebuild mode now. It's like their stars got upset. They made the bad DeAndre Hopkins trade last offseason. They didn't talk to Deshaun Watson when they were hiring their new GM. This organization doesn't seem like they're going in the right direction.
Somehow Bill O'Brien managed to ruin Penn State after the Sandusky scandal and then followed that up by ruining the Houston Texans, which he brought up from the ashes. I don't know. I think it really started with the Hopkins trade and this idea that they couldn't get a first-round pick for him. Like, just the Cardinals absolutely fleeced them. To couple that with just – it seems like it's not a great culture there. I mean, they cleared house. They added a new GM. So, I mean, things are looking up, but I think Deshaun Watson just – after going from basically if you didn't blow that lead against the Chiefs, probably would have went to the Super Bowl. I think they would have beat the Titans. I know the Titans were hot, but you go from that to having the third pick in the draft. That is pretty demoralizing. And just the way everything went, it's a tough look.
And it's not even their pick.
It's not. That's the sad part. They just were so bad. They earned the pick for the Dolphins.
Yeah, Houston kind of circling the drain at this point. We'll see what happens, and we'll definitely let you guys know if Watson or Watt do get moved. Big names. I follow a lot of Steelers fans, and the godsend goal would be getting the Watt brothers together. We have two of them right now. We could have all three if we could somehow figure out a way to find a magical large amount of money, maybe a pot of gold.
That'd be scary. I would like to comment, though, the Texas GM came out yesterday and said Deshaun Watson is going nowhere. I'm confident when we talk to him, he'll stay. Oh my goodness. This is going to be just a nuclear, like, this is going to be like Eric Bledsoe in Phoenix type situation where it's going to be subtweets and like everything. First and foremost, you are not going to get Deshaun Watson to stay. you may not be able to trade him. So good on you, but he is either going to throw games or hold out. Like, I don't think you're going to get either. And it is in your best interest, honestly, to not piss off Deshaun Watson, because he seems to have a lot of fans and a lot of power in the NFL, even being so young, that no one's going to want to come to Houston. And you don't want to be like the laughingstock 2-14 Texans that you were not too long ago, to be honest, at this point. So please, like, trade Deshaun Watson. You can 100% get a haul for him. Like, they will give you first-round picks for this guy, and you mm-hmm. should get a first-round pick, or you're doing something criminally wrong. So
they should get first-round picks for both these guys.
J.J. Watt is a little bit interesting. I'm not saying he's not deserving of first-round picks. He has gotten older. He's a little bit injury-prone, and, like, I'm not talking, like, oh, he has, like, a dead leg or something like that. It's, oh, no, he tears his ACL or, like, Achilles, bad injuries. So you should get a first-round pick out of J.J. Watt, but, like, if you don't, I'm not going to be utterly surprised, because he does have a bad track record of injuries. I mean, J.J. Watt is a perennial all-star. I'm not denying that. It's just the age mixed with, like, the injuries. How much are you going to actually get out of him?
That's fair. That's very true. Lots of things to consider for other franchises when inquiring about these two absolutely superstar talents. Other guys being inquired about, we talked last week about how Matt Stafford's on the trade block. Team looking into him now would be the Rams. And the big question there would be, do you think it's to replace Goff or to back up Goff?
I think Goff is going to be, like, sent into oblivion. Sean McVay apparently hates this guy. And, like, I honestly can see it. Like, I don't think Jared Goff likes him, but I also think Sean McVay knows he's, like, one competent and consistent quarterback away from literally just running the table. And if he had it this year, I honestly think he would have probably made a lot of damage to the NFC. So Matt Stafford, I think, is worth trading for. The other team I've been, like, hearing nonstop about is the 49ers. Mm-hmm. And I think that would put them over the edge if they can all stay healthy. The third place is the Colts. And the Colts are kind of – if the Colts can go from Andrew Luck having a decent year, Jacoby Brissett, to Phillip Rivers, and then to Matt Stafford, also starting with Peyton Manning, like, they've had such great quarterback play. That, to me, is incredible that they've been able to consistently keep such a strong team and then also supplement it with, like, having to either trade or sign quarterbacks. Incredible.
Oh, yeah. And they already came out and said that they want a veteran quarterback leading. They like Brissett, and they like using him in the few pocket plays that they run with him. But they want a veteran back there, and Stafford really fits that bill. He's only been in the playoffs, you know, I think once, maybe twice. But either way, he's a good, solid option that you can put back there, and you don't really have to worry about all too much.
Yeah, I'm not going to fault Stafford for the fact he's only been in the playoffs twice. I'm going to fault that on the Lions and lack of experience, and I don't know, just the Lions, period.
Exactly, just the Lions. All right. Still quarterback talk all around the league. Eagles new coach Nick Sirianni was not making any comments about the quarterback situation here. To me, not too much of a surprise. It's very early in the offseason. There's no real need to draw up any drama about who's going to start. I guess the only really important question to ask is, who do you think he's going to end up choosing?
He's going to have to choose Wentz, because I think that's why he was brought in. Mm-hmm. And I think Lurie and Roseman are playing puppet with him. Now, let's talk about the press conference. Did you watch any of the video of it?
I did not.
Basically, general gist of it, the start of it, kind of stuttering, looked very anxious and nervous. I want to address a few things. First and foremost, for anyone saying he's a bad coach because he, like, was nervous, please never listen to my podcast again, or our podcast, sorry. Just please leave and never talk to me. He stutters, whatever. Now, what I will say, though, there are people who took the other extreme of this and were literally ostracizing, yelling at people who are like, how dare you bully this guy? Like, because it was right after the whole Bell Let's Talk thing. And they're like, this, like, I can't believe you're bullying him and you're preaching, like, all this stuff about Black Lives Matter and all this. Okay, let's not go to the other extreme. Listen, he may not be a good public speaker, but to be a good leader, which a head coach should be, you should practice these things. He had a bad press conference. He should definitely improve on this. But let's also, like, let's preach this idea of bettering yourself rather than, like, trying to bully people for, like, giving legitimate criticism, which was, okay, he did not have a good press conference. So that's my two cents. I think you have to think of it in the middle. I don't know. People can come and yell at me all they want. You should be good at public speaking. Doesn't mean if you don't, you're not, like, you suck, but you it's not something to just ignore.
Yeah. I can't imagine he would have had a bad interview and gotten the job still. So I have to assume the Eagles knew what they were doing and this was not the top of the docket in that term. So that's what we got for the NFL. Just one final reminder that the Super Bowl 55 next weekend, Chiefs and Buccaneers, Tom Brady versus Pat Mahomes, you know, Yoda versus Grogu. If you saw the meme Sports Center posted, fantastic stuff. So that's what we have for the news. We ended on NFL as it's going to be the nice smooth transition into our next segment, which Alex and I are going to list our all-time NFL teams, compare, contrast, see what we got similar, different. How do we want to do this? You want to start? You want to go position by position?
Yeah, I want to further emphasize that this is a battle of wits where it's determined who can make the better all NFL team and whose team would destroy the others, which it will be me because I have the biggest of brains, obviously. So I'm just letting you know that
college, right?
I will destroy you with my intelligence. But yeah, let's go position by position. I'm being like a little bit over the top dramatic. It's with the Pro Bowl coming up, we want to acknowledge players who deserve more. So while like we're going to talk about our, you know, favorite quarterback or favorite running back, we also want to acknowledge the offensive line because without them, Tom Brady wouldn't have lasted 23 years in the NFL. I'm just saying.
Exactly.
All right. What do you want to start with?
I guess let's just start with the easy one, which I assume we're going to have a similar answer for here. Let's just start with the quarterback.
Tom Brady.
Tom Brady as well. I think, you know, we had this GOAT debate before. I did my actually pretty early on in our show. And after further consideration, I'm going to make Tom Brady my all-time quarterback.
Yeah. For now, it's Tom Brady because of longevity and stats. I think, honestly, though, Pat Mahomes wouldn't be a bad pick either. Let's see what happens next Sunday, but
yeah,
it'll be interesting.
Yes, sir. All right, moving down. Running back, who do you have?
Barry Sanders.
Look at us, two for two. All right, I also have good. Barry Sanders. I will say I want to give an honorable mention to Adrian Peterson. He was the other name I considered putting on here.
All right. Let's do wide receivers, I guess. We'll do three.
Three receivers, all right. First one I got listed, Megatron, Calvin Johnson.
Okay. I have Jerry Rice as my top. Yeah.
Can't argue that as I got Jerry Rice number two. So okay. I'll credit you there.
I then have Randy Moss.
Yeah. Yeah. Randy Moss is my three. So I go Megatron, Jerry Rice, Randy Moss.
And then my third is Terrell Owens.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
If you can torch the Patriots defense with screws holding his leg together and still get a 11 catches in the Super Bowl, yeah, he probably is pretty good. Just a little bit of a diva, but one of the best athletes of all time.
Yeah, no, completely agree. The reason I chose Calvin Johnson over him, I chose Calvin Johnson in the sense of I think pure physical talent wise, he is the most talented receiver that we ever saw. He had the very unfortunate circumstance of number one, Matt Stafford throwing to him his entire career, and number two, playing for the Detroit Lions his entire career, as we've so established is not so great for the statistical and accolade winning caliber things. So that's who we have. Wide receiver, tight end. Who do you have? I am excited about my answer here.
I hope it's Eric Ebron. That'd be really funny.
No.
I got to go. This is tough because I want to pick him because I love the name so much and I saw so much of him in like the 2000s. I'm going Todd Heap.
Todd Heap?
Screw everyone. I'm not picking Gronk. I'm picking Todd Heap. Now, Gronk is probably the shoe-in answer, to be honest, but like I like Todd Heap. I like my chances with him. He can do a lot.
Todd Heap was a stud. I got to see him when he was on the Ravens a lot because we played them a lot.
Yep.
And, you know, he was annoying. Like, we had Heath Miller, who was always, like, a nice we could throw to him. He'd catch the ball type deal, a solid bailout option. But Todd Heap was, like, the perfect version of Heath Miller. He was open all the time. He paved the way for Mark Andrews in that system.
Yep.
That's a great one. I went with Travis Kelce.
Okay.
I do love Gronk. I think Gronk, for the time he was able to dominate, was the best tight end. But the fact that he didn't do it for too long is my main drawback. Kelce is breaking all these records for 1,000-yard receiving years, for consecutive games with 100 yards, for touchdowns by tight ends. His career isn't even over, and I think he's at least getting very close to matching the Gronks, the Gonzalez's, the Heaps. If he wins another Super Bowl too, I think he might – like, I think the only person you could even consider really ahead of him would be Gronk.
I think it's fair. Yeah, Kelce has honestly paved the way to kind of gray out this area between tight ends and wide receivers. So I think definitely useful. Okay, let's do offensive line. So we'll do – I will rattle my line off. You do yours, and we'll go from there. Sure. So at left tackle – I desperately want to say Michael Orr, but I'm not going to. I know we talked about this.
The honorable mention.
Honorable mention. Yeah, we're going with not going Michael Orr, even though he has a movie about him at the Blind Side. I am going to go with my boy, Anthony Munoz. That's my left tackle. Left guard, Larry Allen of the good old Cowboys. Next, we got to go with Bruce Matthews, who was so good. He played 18 years and then also gave us Clay and Casey Matthews. So good on him. Other tackle. I'll go say tackle and then do center. Just more of an old one to show I am well-versed. Forrest Gregg. Played for the Packers.
Oh, yep.
I love his name. And then I got to go with Jason Kelce. Well, that's a little bit biased to a pick. Longevity mixed with the fact he's been like the number one center in the league for so many years. Jason Kelce.
It's respectable. Jason Kelce's dominated that center position for so long. The one bright spot of the Eagles offensive line this past year.
Yes, sir.
And I don't judge you for that one at all. So what I have, I'll start with my tackles. I have Joe Thomas and Anthony Munoz. As much as it pains me to pick Bengals and Browns, fantastic players throughout the courses of their careers. Joe Thomas is the one I really wanted to mention. He isn't really listed on a lot of the top lists, but I recognize Joe Thomas as maybe the best Cleveland Brown of all time. And that may not sound like a lot because he's an offensive lineman, but this man dominated for the 13 years that he played. He was a staple on their line. And again, it seems like it doesn't say a lot because you know me, I hate the Cleveland Browns. I trash them any chance I get, but he is one person I never needed to slander because he always showed up and did what he was supposed to do for them. Stuck out being on a bad team despite how good of a player he was. So that's why I love Joe Thomas. For my guards, I have John Hanna and Gene Upshaw. And for my center, I have Mike Webster. To be completely honest, I'm not very well versed in offensive lines, but I was looking at stats as I was doing my research. And these are the guys that the longevity, the percentages in which they were able to prevent blockers from, or excuse me, rushers from getting to the quarterback. They did a very good job. I think these will start to evolve as the game evolves and more top tier talents. You know, David Bakhtiari was a guy I was considering putting on here, Marshall Yanda. So some of the newer guys are getting there, but as of right now, these older guys still going to be holding my spots for the offensive line.
All right. Well, then that's our offense. So I guess I'll throw a wrench in here. Pick your all-time offensive coordinator. Go.
All-time offense coordinator. Holy shit.
Yeah.
God.
Go now.
Throwing me off guard, man. I don't know too many offensive coordinators. Can I just get Bill Belichick calling my plays?
No, you can pick him for head coach when I inevitably get there.
Well, that was unexpected.
I'm gonna be honest,
I don't even know many offensive coordinators by name.
All right, I'm going with Andy Reid as my offensive coordinator because he was an offensive coordinator at one point.
Fair enough. I'll just copy it. I love me some Andy Reid.
All right. So we'll start with the defense. We'll do defensive tackles. So my two are the following. We got Mean Joe Green, Steelers player, shout out. And then I got to go with Aaron Donald. I know his career is not done yet, but I tend to imagine you have those two guys next to each other. Oh, baby. That's just sacks all day.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually have Joe Green as one of my ends. My interior ones are Aaron Donald and Warren Sapp.
Okay.
To be completely honest with the line, I just tried to pick the four best because I feel like if you're an end or an interior, you're going to find success if you're the top tier talent. But for the interior, Aaron Donald, 100%. This man has ascended as maybe the best interior rusher of all time. And then Warren Sapp, I mean, you always hear the stories. This man leads the league in sacks. Some all-time records, at least until Aaron Donald came around. So those were my interior rushers. On the outside, Mean Joe Green, Reggie White, former Eagle. Actually, my mom, back when she worked for a local news station, got to interview Reggie White back in the day, which is, I think, is pretty cool. But those two guys, the Pennsylvania staples, all-time greats when you're talking about rushing the passer.
Yeah, I have Reggie White as well, who just one of the best edge rushers of all time, if not the best. Literally unstoppable, and just, oh my goodness, the guy was so dominant. So unfortunately, it didn't have him for his entire career. The Packers, you know, took him away. The other one, I was so torn because there are so many directions I can go with this. Michael Strahan was a thought, but, you know, he's a Giant, so I hate him, but definitely well-deserving of it. J.J. Watt is another one, but, you know, the injuries. I got to go with someone who kind of got me into football originally. There was – at my elementary school, there's this the library had this old NFL book about trivia questions. And the one thing that always stuck out to me, even as like an 8-year-old, was Deacon Jones of the Rams. Dominant player, probably one of the scariest people in his era. Would his play hold up? I'm going to say yes. And we're going to take him on our team and we're going to just dominate Robbie's Tom Brady.
Jeez. Yeah. Tom Brady, look out. No, never want to see that group of men rushing, even if you have the offensive lines we've given them. It's a scary sight to see on the other end.
Exactly.
Pushing back on the defense. Talk about some linebackers here. I picked two offensive linebackers and one middle linebacker. So my outside linebackers, Lawrence Taylor of the Giants, Jack Lambert of the Steelers. There's probably a million Pittsburgh Steelers linebackers I could have picked from the back in the day, the Steel Curtain, the early 2000s. But Jack Lambert's always the one that really stuck out to me. Aggressive, high energy guy, always seemed to be in the right spot, making the right play when he was on the field, and obviously won multiple Super Bowls with Pittsburgh. So him and Taylor, my outside linebackers.
I guess I agree with Lawrence Taylor being the fact he would literally end people's careers with the hits he made. The other one I got to go with, and Ray Lewis is a very tempting choice to piss you off, but Chuck Benarek, literally, apparently if you got hit by him, it was like literally hitting a brick wall. And Oof. To me, like, that screams Philly, and he was so dominant, no one to play against him, a literal true staple to Pennsylvania. So Chucky B, you're my other linebacker.
Middle linebacker?
Middle linebacker. This is tough. I want to put Junior Seau just in the middle. I'm pretty sure he was an outside, but like, I'm going to say Junior Seau. I'm just going to stack the box, deal with it.
No, that's a good one. I'm also essentially picking an outside linebacker. I'm picking Ray Lewis as my middle linebacker.
Fair.
I like, say all you want about him as a person, say all you want about the fact that he was a Baltimore Raven, but you cannot deny how good he was at football. Almost by himself brought that city a Super Bowl. Ray Lewis, he's my middle linebacker. No questions asked. And now let's move into the secondary here. Two cornerbacks. Who are your top guys?
Simple and very easy. It's Deion Sanders and Darrell Revis.
Well, look at that. I may have switched them in order, but Darrell Revis and Deion Sanders are also my top two choices. Dude, Revis Island was a problem. You talk about the best shutdown corners, and you cannot skip out on either of these two names. But, you know, I got to watch more, obviously, Darrell Revis based on our age. And, man, he was – even though it was the Jets, you never, ever wanted to play them because your best receiver was going to get locked down.
And then Deion was just a freak athlete on top of that and was also a shutdown corner.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Look up some of the plays that those two players were able to make in the secondary. It'll blow your mind.
Safeties. Two more.
Yeah. All right. You want to do free safety or strong safety first?
I just have two safeties.
That's fine. Go for it.
My first safety is Jack Tatum.
Ooh.
Because Jack Tatum is such a dangerous player that I'd need someone to incite fear in the other team. Jack Tatum, if you don't know, played for the Raiders the bulk of his career. And basically every time there'd be a pass in the middle, he would just lead with his head. Like, he'd be ejected from every game nowadays. But the man was, like, so dangerous and would lead with his head. He paralyzed a man, like, in his first NFL game. He was that dangerous. Also responsible for the hit that led to the immaculate reception. He lit up whoever your tight end was, and Franco Harris caught the ball. But a lot of power, a lot of force, and a lot of fear, which I really like.
That's fair.
My other safety, and this one went back and forth. There are a lot of, you know, the Eagles players I was thinking about in the early 2000s. Brian Dawkins is one of them.
That's a good one.
So I'm a little bit torn. I got to go with Brian Dawkins. I know. It wasn't much of a lead up. Brian Dawkins is my choice. Just from like also Brian the fury Dawkins. Put into people.
He's at the very least definitely top five. Brian Dawkins, like, sensational career. I won't bust your balls too much on that one. My two safeties. So I really wanted to bring the name Ronnie Lott into this, but the more and more I thought about it, the more and more, because I got to see, so the two safeties I'm going to pick are two safeties I got to see play the bulk of their career against each other, played a lot. And I always had the thought, God, if one of these two teams got both of these two safeties, nobody would score touchdowns on this team. No long balls would ever happen. And those two guys are Troy Polamalu and Ed Reed. Polamalu, the Tasmanian Devil, one of the most energetic defensive players I've ever seen. He was all over the field all the time. He was sacking quarterbacks. He was deflecting passes. Sensational safety. And Ed Reed, one of the smartest defensive backs I've ever seen, calculating, was able to see where the quarterback was going to throw the football, was able to get where he knew he needed to go. I truly believe that they are maybe even the clear and by far best safeties. I may be a little biased on Polamalu. He's my favorite football player of all time. That's my bias. But them two together, had that ever happened, good luck to opposing offenses.
All right. Well, that concludes our all-time draft. Obviously, there are some that went together. Oh, no, wait. No. Hold on.
Oh, yeah, we got three more positions, man.
Pump the brakes. We got to go with the special teams people.
There's not going to be a whole lot of differing opinions here, but got to give these guys the shout outs. I believe we came to the consensus on all three of these, if I'm not mistaken. That would be kicker Adam Vinatieri, punter Pat McAfee, and return specialist Devin Hester. I don't think you can at all argue that one. All these three dominate in their own right. Adam Vinatieri, one of the greatest field goal kickers of all time, Super Bowls with multiple teams. Long career. Pat McAfee, a monster of a leg. Also, one of my favorite things about Pat McAfee, the day he retired, he posted on Twitter that he tried Adderall for the very first time, and his comment was, I 100% know why this is a banned substance in the league. And then, of course, Devin Hester, famous for his returns, the untouched 100-yard kick return for a touchdown being the key one. But, I mean, that dude, you couldn't kick to him or he'd score a touchdown.
Yep. Just incredible. And I remember Super Bowl 41, the opening play, kickoff return touchdown. I'm like, uh-oh, Colts are in some trouble.
So there we go. Now we can conclude our all-time draft, all-time rosters. Let us know what you think, who you agree and disagree with. Also, whose team would win, and why it was mine.
Listen, I'll put it this way. I don't care how good you drafted. Jack Tatum will injure every single one of your players in your team. I'm just going to warn you.
Barry Sanders did have a short career.
No wonder why you retired early.
Yeah, right. All right. One more segment here. We are going to go back and do some superlatives. Five for you for this past week of sports. And we're going to start, as always, with the MVP. And my MVP, actually, a lot of my awards are going to teams rather than individuals this week. It's the St. Louis Cardinals for the acquisition of Nolan Arenado and $50 million to go towards restructuring his contract. Again, just the Cardinals making moves to not just be a contender, but to be one of the top tier teams in baseball. Getting a top-tier talent like that, absolutely fantastic. To pile along with a little extra cap in the pocket. So very nicely done, St. Louis. MVPs for this week.
This one I thought long and hard about, and I have come to the consensus that I must give my award to the Utah Jazz. Just the Jazz being the fact that they're actually good this year, and I'm not talking like, you know, four seed, and they kind of fall off. They actually look good. Just beating Luka Doncic, who we have praised every day on this show. They're scary. I don't think they're going to win the entire thing, but like they're not going to be a good matchup for any team. And I think they'd fare better if they're in the East, just matchup wise. I think they could make a lot of noise, but definitely a lot of ups. The team is deep. They can do a lot. They've definitely really grew and kind of cultivated something special there. So I'll give it to the Jazz as like the MVP this week.
Yeah, no, Utah Jazz having a fantastic year to start, as we mentioned at the top of the show. Most disappointing player or team, who disappointed you this week, Alex?
Dude, there's everyone's a disappointment in my book. No one doing good. I gotta give it to the Mavs. I know I just talked a ton about them, but like, this team was supposed to be so good. We thought their acquisitions were so good, but they're just not playing well together, and like, it's a mess there. So, Mavs. Yeah.
Say this, if they don't make the playoffs, Luka has forfeit his chance to win MVP, and that's absolutely for certain in the NBA. My most disappointing happened actually just today. 9-seeded Alabama fell to 24-seed Oklahoma. Alabama was so hot, playing such great basketball. It's a good team in Oklahoma, but this is starting to get towards the bulk of the season, the tough parts of the season. You have to be able to win your close games. And Alabama was unable on the road, so it's a little leeway here. But either way, tough loss for them. A little disappointed there because I thought they were going to actually rock Oklahoma going in. But either way, they should hopefully bounce back. But I am a little disappointed in that this afternoon. The bad boy. Who's been bad boy for me? Houston. Maybe just the city of Houston, but specifically the Texans. Clearly did something to aggravate their stars, whether it's just, you know, the trade of Hopkins that started it all, not having their draft pick, the lack of success from this year, and yeah, even starting from that blown playoff game last year, it's really all starting to settle in as this might not just be a fluke, this might be a structural problem for the organization. So they've been bad. They got to figure some stuff out because they had the team. They were right there.
Yeah. He's been a very bad boy, obviously. But I got to give mine to Steve Cohen, who's the new owner of the New York Mets. You know, not because of anything he's done in terms of trades. I think he's done a great job. But what he's done off the field and on Twitter. So our boy, I don't know if anyone listening here has been watching finance. You know, usually you don't because it's kind of boring. But the world was changed this week due to Reddit and Wall Street Bets and everyone uniting over GameStop and AMC stock and just like, you know, bring back the little man, like screw the institutions, all that. And everyone was kind of for it. Like even politicians for once, Democrats, Republicans were all for screwing over these hedge funds. And Steve Cohen had to open his mouth and start chiming in and everyone just torched him. So Steve Cohen, you've been a very bad boy, and Don't think you just deleted your Twitter because, oh, I'm sick and tired of getting all these notifications. No, you got torched, buddy. You've been a bad boy.
Yeah, no, you brought that on yourself, man.
100%.
All right. Terrible stuff there. Moment of the week. Moving on. For me, it was just the satisfaction of being able to rest and enjoy the fact that the Phillies had re-signed JT Realmuto. To me, that was the, you know, I immediately, as soon as I saw it, sent you the notification on Twitter. Had to just note that because, man, it was a long offseason, especially because we had just been making these lackluster moves in the bullpen and all this crap. And then finally, we get the one piece that we really needed to bring back. I was very happy. And again, as tough as this division is going to be, it makes me feel that much better about the Phillies' chances this upcoming season.
My moment of the week was the Lakers versus Sixers game when Tobias Harris clutched it out and hit the game winner over Alex Caruso. Sixers are scary. Let's not forget that. They look great this year. And the fact that Tobias Harris is looking worth his max contract is also very scary. The league should be terrified. And I don't know. I like the fact that the Sixers can close out games. They look great. They've been playing so well together. Joel Embiid looks like a monster. So that's my moment of the week. So, so happy that they won and beat the Lakers.
Yeah, no, that was an awesome, awesome basketball game for anybody who didn't watch. And I'll say this, the best thing that ever happened to Tobias Harris is Doc Rivers.
100%.
All right, one final award here. That would be the return of the king. I am going to go here. So it's not a team I necessarily slandered by any means, but they kind of fallen out of the spotlight. And I wanted to give some props to the San Antonio Spurs. They're currently 11-8 and the 4 seed in the West. You know, teams and people started to think that this team was on the outs, that Greg Popovich might be winding down his legendary career. But either way, they are outperforming themselves right now. The roster is playing fantastic. Not just the starters, but like Patty Mills is bought in. He's averaging 14 plus off the bench. And then you're revitalizing guys like Murray, who's coming off the tough ACL injury. And then the older guys are bought in. Aldridge, DeRozan, they're all playing together. They're all playing well. So, of course, a lot of season to go and very little room separating 4 through essentially 11 in the West. But a good sign from San Antonio. And I always love to see the Spurs in the playoffs, even if they're not a top team. They're always going to make that series, even if it's just the first round series, they're going to make that series an enjoyable one.
100% agree. Mine has to be a delayed one, and it goes to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who this season has been whack on the sense that there have been some games you think you just know is going to win, and it's just been absolute blowout. Like the Bears-Bucks on Monday night, what was that other than just Nick Foles willing his way over Tom Brady for the umpteenth time? Mm-hmm. So just congrats the Bucks, one, for turning it on when need be. I still don't like the fact you have a home Super Bowl, but then again, you also didn't have a home playoff game, so good on you. I've definitely talked about, like, this team should be good, but, like, they've just looked so inconsistent that I've sort of kind of threw them away to a degree. You know, I'm not saying I rooted against them or counted them out in the playoffs by any means, but, like, I don't know. Like, good on them for going to Super Bowl. It's going to be a real big showdown. They could honestly be my return of the gesture next week if they get the brakes blown off them by Patty Mahomes, but we will see. Right now, good on them for living up to the hype and making it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they were supposed to do when they brought in Brady and all those other weapons from the offseason. So that's what we got for you this week. Remember, Super Bowl Sunday coming up, as we just mentioned, Buccaneers, Chiefs, and of course, All-Star voting for the NBA has begun. Don't forget to vote for your favorite players. We'll be back next week. Might be Sunday, Monday. Probably going to wait until the Super Bowl so we can give you the full report on that. Of course, that'll be the last big NFL report for a little while. Other than that, hope you guys enjoy the content. And as always, have a fantastic rest of your week.
Take care, guys.